Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Culture, why we can't go outside and play today?
Baby, because there's too much happening out there. We got misguided people in this world who turn to violence and use guns, and sometimes innocent people like you and me get caught in the middle of it.
Well, what's wrong with them?
Baby, I don't know. They need change in their life.
Welcome to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks for Thursday, December 17th, 2009, with your host, Mr. Ron Carter, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. This is Sonia Perdue, founder of Chicago's Black Business Network.com, and I will be Mr. Carter's co-host for this show. We want to thank all of you for joining us this evening. Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks is on the air every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. here on CBBN on Blog Talk Radio. Our caller number is 347-326-9477. Our caller number is 347-326-9477. The chat room is open. Leave your company information and website links in the chat room. Press the number 1 if you would like to speak to our guests or if you have a comment. You can listen to us live at www.blogtalkradio.com/CBBN. Good evening, Ron. How are you today?
To you, Sonia, and all our listeners out here on the Chicago Black Business Network. Pleasure to be here this evening.
Ron, looks like we're going to have a great show tonight. Why don't you start out by telling our listeners who's on the show tonight?
Well, tonight we are following up from our member of Obie Woodlaw from last week. Tonight we have the Senator Donnie Trotter. Donnie Trotter has been in office for, I believe, about 20 or 22 years on the south side of Chicago, and he is the lead legislator that pushed the Black Wall Street agenda on the Senate floor. So he's going to be with us. He has a lot to express with us and inform us regarding sustaining and increasing Black businesses. And then from there, we're going to have some open lines and talk to our listeners this evening. So this is what we got going. I'm pretty sure we're going to give everybody a good earful of agendas to sustain and increase Black businesses.
Sounds great, Ron. Yes, we do want to take time and show our appreciation to last week's guest, Mr. Obie Woodlaw. Mr. Woodlaw is a board member on Black Wall Street Chicago and the CEO of his own medical equipment and supply company since 1987. And we look forward to having Mr. Woodlaw back on an upcoming show. You know, Ron, last week we talked a little bit about the formulation of Black Wall Street Chicago and Black Wall Street in Tulsa. Now, this evening, I want to talk a little bit about the Chicago historian, Ron Cotter.
Oh, yeah? You do?
Yeah, I do.
Well, I'll see what we can do about that.
We can do something about that. Now, Ron, when I say historian, I say that to the listeners because I want you to get to know all the different sides of Mr. Cotter. Mr. Cotter has been the editor and publisher of South Street Journal since 1993. And I want to just briefly, Ron, tell our listeners how you became a newspaper man and about the startup of South Street Journal.
Well, Sonia, I don't know how to start and finish, but I'm pretty grateful that the Columbia University of New York is in a project for the last 2 years to give that story of South Street Journal, and to the point that South Street Journal actually came from public housing residents of Robert Taylor Holmes. I was an organizer before I got into the newspaper business. And in doing so, residents from public housing asked me to put a paper together based on my experience working with the Chicago Defender. And so as I did that to help them, it actually came out that I'm the fifth publisher of South Street Journal newspaper. Those before me was pretty brief, but for the past 16 years, I've been the publisher, and it's been a great experience. And I think one thing about the Black media we have to be concerned about is sometimes it's not always reporting the news, but sometimes you get involved in making the news. And combining that community organizing background with the media, it has positioned South Street Journal in a way of being an activist newspaper. Here in Chicago, when we started the newspaper, we mainly wanted to be a Black, not a Black newspaper, but a community newspaper. But as the issues evolve, we see that Chicago have a lot of racial overturns in the issues in the economic development, for lack of words, in the name of capitalism. And so South Street Journal, as we have evolved from a grassroots organizing newspaper, we're now a economic development newspaper focused based on my role as being the chairman of the Black Wall Street. So with that, we have gained a lot of good people that has been with South Street Journal as well as with Black Wall Street that has been pushing this agenda and pushing the newspaper as well. So sometimes, based on my organizing background, it's a little hard at times to separate the two because we have to be a tool. We have to be an objective newspaper that report the news exactly as it is, but we also have to have an agenda as it reflects to our readership, which is no different than a Chicago Sun-Times, Tribune, Defender, Indigo, any publication have their political agenda. So South Street Journal agenda comes from community organizing. Does that give you a little idea, and the reader, I hope it gives you some idea of the nature of South Street Journal and how it relates to me?
It does.
What's that?
What we're going to do, when you told me last week that Columbia College archived all those back issues from 1993,
they sure did.
I went out there and found them, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it's amazing to me as well. I think our listeners can go right to Columbia University of New York, and you can go to the website and look for South Street Journal under the search, and you will find every issue of South Street Journal online since 1993. And as you indicated about the historian part of it, is that a newspaper, a media itself, is a library of history and information. And I got to tip my hats again for Columbia, because what they're going to be doing is not only archiving the South Street Journal issue since 1993, but they're doing a documentary on South Street Journal, and they're also doing a book. So we're looking for a book to come out regarding the newspaper as well. So, yeah, we've been quietly moving, quietly trying to get involved, and it brought us to this point with Black Wall Street. So, and it brought us back to the Chicago Black Business Network, Sonia, which we definitely have to thank you, not only Black Wall Street, but the listeners here, for the program and the services that you provide. And we're going to work real closely with the Chicago Black Business Network. Is that a fact?
Okay. That's a fact. We're going to go together. We're going to do some great things. 2010 looks like a great year. You're listening to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks with our host, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago, Ron Carter. I'm Sonia Perdue. Our guest is on the line. We're going to welcome Senator Donnie Trotter to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Sonia?
Mr. Trotter, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? Hey, Ron, how you doing?
I'm all right, Senator. How about yourself?
It's been a pretty good day. Busy, but that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Yeah, well, welcome to the Chicago Black Business Network and our program of Black Wall Street Speaks. Before we get into the program, I just want to get we was talking earlier, was it yesterday or today, and you were telling me that you're from Oklahoma.
I'm not from Oklahoma. Born in Cary, Illinois. No, my grandparents, when people say, where does your family come from? Some people say Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi. My family actually migrated to Chicago from Oklahoma.
Okay, and how long have you been here?
I've been here all my life.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
my grandparents migrated up here in 1905.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've been I understand, based on your background, you've been a state representative and then moved on to the senator. Can you give the our listeners a little background of Donnie Trotter?
That's my political background. I'm a child of the 60s, activism is what we lived for, that we breathed the air for.
Okay.
I've been going through the movement, working with many organizations during that time, starting with the Malcolm X Black Hand Society, moving over to the Panther Party out of California as a recruiter.
You was Black Panther?
Yes, and coming back as worked as a recruiter in the states of Arizona and New Mexico.
No, I didn't know that background about
there's
you.
There's a lot of things.
People be thinking that Bobby Rush was the only Black Panther in Chicago at times.
Well, he was the only one in Chicago that is in politics. That is true. I, at that time, I had gone to University of Arizona and ended up at the University of California at Berkeley. So I was out there during those years.
I was one of those associates of the Black Panther Party as well, but okay, go ahead.
So ultimately, I came back to Chicago in 1974 when Ralph Metcalf Jr. put out a clarion call to assist his father, whose congressional seat was at risk because the original Mayor Daley was running the candidate against him. So came back, worked the campaign, discovered that I had some organizational skills, became the administrative assistant for then the state representative, Louie Caldwell.
Okay.
Worked with him and Harold Washington in Springfield, Illinois, and that's how I basically discovered Springfield as a political place.
Okay.
And ultimately got involved in electoral politics from that point. 1987, I was elected into office as state representative, and I've been serving ever since.
All right. So which ward did you get your political experience from?
What ward did I
yeah.
grew up as a child in the third ward. I grew up at 40th
okay.
Indiana.
In so Bronzeville, huh?
That's what they call it now.
Right, okay.
So at the time, again, this is, so I grew up in the neighborhood where we live. You know, third ward is the ward of Ralph Metcalf and Harold Washington. And those individuals, we only had two wards we were controlling. That was the second and the third during those days.
Correct. Right.
Before I moved out, my family had always been involved in politics in one way or the other. So it was a natural transition for me to go forward.
Right.
We all believed in one, being involved in the community and you were in. And
you mentioned that that's what they used to call Bronzeville. You have another name that relates to the Bronzeville, Chicago?
Yeah, it was just called the Hood.
The Hood? That's it?
Well,
okay. Well, I mean, okay.
For the neighborhood.
All right.
But, again, I went to DuSable.
Okay. Well, see, we got that in common, too. I'm an alumni of DuSable. Oh, okay. Well, as you kind of move through the your political travels, is there any particular legislation that stands out in the crowd to you that you help push?
In my 22 years in the Illinois General Assembly, I guess there's probably a lot of things that I can take a lot of pride in as far as pushing the agenda for. But one in particular, which is one of the biggest and most people are familiar with, is the Kid Care program itself. To give you a little side history on that, I replaced Carol Mosby Braun when she went to Cook County Recorder of Deeds. And as a consequence of that, one of my pledges that I made to the community, and especially the women in particular, that I can do anything that Representative Braun can do, except walking around in high heel shoes.
Okay.
And how that was interpreted was that I can carry women's issues as well as carry the issues of arrested issues of the community. So
okay.
One of the first pieces of legislation that I was asked to sponsor was to expand the Medicaid federal poverty line from 100% to 133%.
Okay.
Essentially, that means that you get more for the percentage rate was higher for those who would be eligible than from the 100% that the government designated as the standard. Well, Kid Care, for those who, and many of that have used it through the years, I don't know, there's millions of people in the state of Illinois that fall up under that, is now at 400% of the federal poverty line. So in my tenure, I've taken it from 100% to 400% of women and children of the federal poverty line now can receive Medicare and Medicaid benefits and as well as health care benefits throughout this state. So that's one of the main things that I can be said I'm very proud of.
Now, you have I guess health-related, you was in the health-related industry before becoming an elected official as well?
That's correct. Well, as was said, my real job before I was elected was that I was a senior administrator at Cook County Hospital for 17 years, and then for another 7 years, I was the director of Minority Health for the Cook County Department of Public Health. My degree is from Loyola Law School, with a specialty in health law.
Okay. Well, let me, you led the Senate, Illinois Senate, to pass the Black Wall Street district here on Chicago on 75th Street. Can you elaborate what made you want, even though it was partial of a request, but what's how significant is that to you in passing that legislation?
So you said, besides the fact that you twisted my arm.
We didn't twist your arm. We asked you about it a few times, but you came through. Right. Yeah, you were walking in, where were you? In,
I was a Soul Vegetarian.
Right, yeah, you walked in on our meeting.
Breakfast and bam, there you
there
were.
There we were.
Discussing this project. Now, the Black Wall Street initiative is very important. It's very important, one, for the community. Is very clear in its wording that it is one of the only districts that is represented with the same percentage of black people who live there own and operate the same percentages of businesses. And I think that's a very significant statement that has to be made. Growing up on 47th Street and in the 50s, my grandparents was one of the first group of people that moved out to Park Manor and moved out to Chatham neighborhood. Mm-hmm. That became the beginnings of, and I don't know if you call it middle class at the time, it's just they were working class people who were able to move out of the cut up apartments that we had down in 46th and 39th Street, as you said, in Bronzeville at the time. This is when they saved their monies, they worked at the post office, they worked as school teachers, they worked as bus drivers, and that wall was broken down, that artificial wall that wouldn't allow us to move past 63rd Street came down. So my grandparents moved out there in 1955, and so moved us at this point at 7658 South Calumet. So that, of course, is where, when you went to Grandma's house, that's where I went. So I grew up in that community. As Sandy, these were my other set of friends who lived on the block. It was the opportunity, whereas on 46th in Indiana, as we did on 45th in Prairie and Calumet, we didn't play in the vacant lots. We didn't play in the alley. It was the kind of community where you can play in the streets, where everyone looked out for you.
Well, let me ask, what? Okay, go ahead.
So all that to say, there's a certain love in my heart that I have for 75th Street. Mm-hmm. I've seen those businesses grow and actually come into being throughout my lifetime. So it wasn't a hard sale nor a hard arm twist to get me to support and to promote the wonderful economic region.
Okay, we appreciate that from Black Wall Street very much so, because the people in Oakland, California, and Atlanta, and Minneapolis, the other Black Wall Street district, was just ecstatic over that legislation, where it gives them some direction to move forward based on what you all did here in the state of Illinois. As far as 75th Street is concerned, why would you? How can you assess that that is basically the only street in Chicago that has that parity of businesses to their population? How have they been able to sustain when other commercial strips in Chicago has not?
It's been able to sustain itself in large part from what I said in the beginning, that the people who lived in the community, one of the first generation of our generation and of our peer group, to move out there, really kept that neighborhood very viable. Viable, one, because it took care of their houses. You can see now in the surrounding area, Chatham, which is to the south, and Park Manor to the west, to the north, that it is considered the most stable black middle-class community in the United States.
Does that contribute to 75th Street opposed?
75th, and then 75th, well, it's a contributory to all of those factors, to people who took care of their property, took pride in and their property and enough and kept their money in the neighborhood, because you can't be viable if you're spending your money in other neighborhoods.
Well, looking at the economic...
It is a travesty right now that the second richest district, or where dollars change hand from North Michigan Avenue, is Pilsen, and that's because they keep their dollars in their neighborhood.
Well, and I was going to ask you about Pilsen. Let me ask, well, how about Peel Hill, for example?
What about Peel Hill?
How come the black businesses have not been sustained on, say, on 87th Street compared to 75th Street? Is there any type of plan?
I'm not a member of the Chamber of Commerce, but many of the stores and businesses that have been along 75th Street have been just like the homes. They pass from generation to generation.
Okay, all right.
So whereas there's always been a turnover of businesses from, say, from Stony Island to Jeffrey, and the stripping isn't as long. As you know, on 75th Street, which many neighbors do not have, there is a bowling alley. We have our own bar.
Right.
We have clubs. We have one of the most nationally renowned restaurants, Army and Lou's, sitting right there. We have the diversity of not only having one of the best soul food but best cuisine restaurants, but we have the diversity of having one of the best vegetarian restaurants, soul vegetarian restaurants.
You heard what happened to them?
I did hear that they had a little problem, a little bump in the road, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it has been a good part of our community and of the makeup of the community. You have Lim's Barbecue that's there. People come from all over the country and say they have to go up there and get one of those sausage sandwiches or what else. Hot Lim's.
Well, as we look at when President Barack Obama came out with his economic agenda for the stimulus, part of his within his first month or so, he made the statement of Wall Street to Main Street, and Black Wall Street kind of add on to that to say 75th Street. I guess it's a two-pronged question. What does that mean that really can help Black Wall Street or 75th Street, and how does this relate to even the stimulus funds, as Barack just recently stated that he wanted to have the banks to be more small business friendly?
It's a good rhetoric the president gave us, but the reality is that we have to put the pressure. We from the community, he's talking in the macro, we need to be talking down at the micro level. We know that if we're going to build ourselves, if we're going to get ourselves out of this economic slump that we're in, it's going to be from the same thing that built this country in the first place, and that is with ma and pa businesses, small incubator businesses, which are going to continue to generate and churn that dollars, those dollars, in our community.
Well, let me ask you about recently I heard that the Walmart is going to be opening up on 83rd Street, a project that Alderman
It's Brookings. Howard Brookings.
Right. Now,
you're being a little premature.
I think
the mayor is talking that to the aldermen that they should be a little more open-minded in allowing a Walmart to be built, because it will generate jobs
If that happens, would the small businesses be affected?
Certainly, anytime there's competition, small businesses are going to be affected. But, however, 75th Street gives us a lot of specialty shops that you can't change. We have the wood shop that is up there.
Sound like you're not so in favor of the of that big box coming on 83rd Street?
I didn't say that. I said,
what are you rather than?
No,
are you in favor of it?
The main thing is I don't have a vote in it, so I can't say I have a vote. So
Senator.
You can't push me up in here and say where I am or not. Like the community, I will know the impact. There certainly will be an impact. Anytime something new moves into a community, people are going to go there. But there's no secret that shopping at Walmart. They're going all the way down to Evergreen, sending their taxpayer dollars, our base, into a whole another suburban community.
So is this what Barack is talking about? Is you saying that that is more rhetoric when he made?
Because he cannot answer. He can't make the banks do that. He can recommend that that is something that happens. He certainly does not have the power to regulate the smaller banks, the state-owned banks. I mean, there's three different kind of banking systems here. You know, there's the federal banks, and there's the state banks, and then there's local banks. So he doesn't have the authority over all of those banks to do that. But certainly it is something good for the commander-in-chief to say that these banks should make their lending practices a little more lenient. It sells good papers, but there's no teeth behind him saying that.
So is there a real connection between the whole stimulus focal of this government to local small businesses, or is there some targeted projects for Chicago as it relates to the stimulus funds that you know of?
No. Well, that's just two different questions. One, the stimulus dollars, and this has been well documented, in fact, have not trickled down to the community level, which is why we're now hearing that the banks should do that, or there should be another stimulus package to do that. There was dollars to bail out the banks. There was dollars to bail out the car dealership, the car industry. There's been dollars supposedly to stimulate jobs, which hasn't happened. But there's nothing specifically that has been dollars in that stimulus package that said these dollars should go for those incubator projects, these dollars should go for these other building projects. There have not been dollars in the stimulus dollars that have been disseminated through the feds. Now, there are projects. And if
I guess you can't see my expression, Senator, but I have an expression of frustration on my face when I'm hearing you saying that there has been no stimulus money touch the black community. And if I may rephrase the question.
And you shouldn't be, because if you walk down the street, do you see anything? I mean, you don't know. You don't have to go far. Look out.
So where does the community go at this point?
Then let's go.
Because
further.
See, we hear a lot of stimulus meetings. There's been a lot of stimulus meetings here. This group, a lot of elected officials have had seminars, meetings. There's organizations having seminars and meetings on the stimulus. But yet, what I'm hearing from you is that of all this time, no one have received anything.
Have you seen it? No. Don't play like you're sitting on the moon, Ron. I mean, am I telling you something different or wrong?
No, you're not. I mean,
okay.
I haven't heard anything either. I'm just thinking
okay.
that we don't know.
Right. So let's first let me take myself out of the realm of where you're trying to push me. First, you tried to push me into city council and how I was there.
You need to run for mayor too. But anyway, go ahead.
City council. And now you're having me sit here and interpret on the Fed level. Let me try to tell you what I can tell you that is happening on the state level. How's that?
Okay.
I think I'm much more comfortable to talk about that than what these other groups are projecting that they want to do. What we were able to do last year in May was we did pass a $30 billion capital program. Now, prior to doing that, we passed a $10 billion capital program, and that was to use the federal dollars, as they said, the stimulus dollars that came in. That was the share of the state's share of dollars that went into highways and for reconstruction for schools. But back to this $30 billion. This is a five-year program. These dollars will be used in what we feel is the state's stimulus package, since everyone seems to be caught up on this stimulus idea.
Okay, I understand.
So and with that, there's going to be dollars in there to rebuild schools, and also repair schools to deal with some of our deferred capital needs that has been neglected for the past 9 years. Those dollars will go to the roads funds to help build new roads, repair these our aging bridges that are out there that are on the verge of collapse, as you saw what happened up in Minnesota. I mean, our bridges are in that shape or worse. Dollars will also go towards our hospital network as well.
But okay, well, even with these programs.
But in the immediate, I mean, I'm giving you the overview.
Okay.
In the immediate, what we have gotten out of there is $475 million, which will go to our community. Because when we talk about jobs on the highway.
What percentage is that?
What percentage?
Do you know? Right. What percentage of that $450
million? $475 million? $425 million is actually the number. I'm sorry. It's
right. Okay. What percentage of that of the budget? Do you know?
Well, if you divide into 30, yes, yeah, about a half a percent.
Okay.
5%. And that's there. So, what is that? But $475 million goes to what we have as our weatherization program.
Mm-hmm.
The weatherization program is to allow individuals to do two things. One, to help get our houses together that are energy efficient. So $6,000 will go to individuals who need their windows tightened up, needs a new storm door. So it saves on your energy costs, and it also puts people to work. Because out of this, little companies of individuals who do not have union training, who have not gone to school, but can learn the non-complicated ways of how to do this work, will be getting jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there any projection of how many jobs will be produced from this from the program?
No, we're assuming thousands. We're talking about $475 million. Each group, and this is so big companies can't come in and take the money. Little companies, you can form a company, Ron, a group, and you apply for $500,000. That's a half a million dollars. And out of that, haven't done the math at this point.
Well, yeah, matter of fact, on that note, we had a meeting today on Black Wall Street with some contractors in which we came up with a program, Black Contractors in the Neighborhood. And matter of fact, I was meeting with two groups of contractors following up on exactly what you just suggested, where I can or any individual can. But these are some contractors that's working with Black Wall Street to do exactly what you're just recommending to us.
So the money is going to DECO, who will handle it. And to ensure that these dollars do not get, well, ensure as much as we can, do not get misspent or misdirected and spent in somebody else's neighborhood, that in the legislation we have put together a panel of 9 individuals, of people who will oversee where these dollars are being spent and how they're being spent. Because even though $500,000 is not a lot of money, it's enough money to get somebody in trouble and they go to jail. So we have a panel of 5 individuals who will be selected, who knows the industry, and it'd be a legislator from each caucus. I happen to be one of those legislators that sits on that panel.
Well, I think that is one particular key that a lot of listeners and a lot of people have to get real and synced into the legislation that you are passing that actually do create jobs and economic opportunities. How would that relate to, say, 75th Street or any business strip in actually seeking funding from the government? Is there some secret who you know to actually receive project funding, or
no?
Because
not,
that's a norm that is heard out in the public.
No, well, that's unfortunate. Unfortunately, there has not been a lot of communication with legislators, elected officials, with the populace, and it's everybody's fault. I can say to my defense, I can't be everywhere. And then, as a matter of fact, we gave a meeting on this weatherization program 2 weeks ago of Chicago State.
Yes, I recall.
Huh?
Yes, I recall.
Yeah, we sent out invitations for 100 people. We might have gotten 30. So it's we have to work together to get the message out on how things happen. So it's again, we all both can do a better job. But this isn't the only monies that are out there. There are dollars, and I would recommend for those of your listeners, and if you go up to Chicago State and talk to Ms. Isabel Conda in their business center, she can help you navigate some of these contracts and RFPs that are out there that individuals can apply for.
So, okay, well then, with the different programs coming from the state and naturally from the other branches of government, and you mentioned the fact that for black businesses, you have to address the mom and pop type of small business operations to move forward. But yet the government has some programs. Can you foresee the black community becoming imperative to the population, at least in Chicago, based on business representation?
It can be. We have a long way to go. As I said, we have a bad habit of not spending our money in our community. There's been some great businesses owned by people of color, but people, give you 87th Street, for example, and I can't remember the shoe store that was up there. I bought shoes up there.
Cam and Nate?
No, not Cam and Nate. This is right in the middle, across from where Walgreens was. And this, I'm talking about 10 years ago.
Oh, yes. I know. Is Maxine still there?
Maxine's was up that way, but this is not Maxine I'm thinking of. But,
yeah.
But anyway, quality. We had to go out of business because it was just me and you buying shoes out of there. Everybody else had to go downtown.
Take, for example, I guess the overall planning on economic development that the city of Chicago, but this is the regional, this is Northeastern, the 2040 plan. You familiar with this here?
No.
Okay, where the 2040 plan, which is my understanding is exists through legislation of the state of Illinois, and which they're going to be presenting the city, the Northeastern Illinois 2040 plan next year, and a preliminary for 2020. But looking at the landscape of Chicago and taking consideration Black Wall Street District of 75th Street, do you think that the west side of Chicago can come into priority as well?
Sure. And I'm not your consummate optimist. I mean, it's going to take hard work. It's going to take a lot of working together to make those things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, let me ask you.
Opportunities are tight right now. As you know, it's tight all over. It's not just tight in our community. And it is tight to get those startup loans, those startup grants. But I know that there's federal dollars and there are city dollars and there's state dollars through. As well through DECO, which is the Department of Economic Community.
Now, is there a blueprint, so to speak, even though with Black Wall Street, what we do is have summits every 3 months to give a overview of Chicago, an assessment of business organizations in Chicago. But from your understanding, is there a entity, if I may say, such as what the Chicago Urban Youth used to do, to give reports on different economic forecasting for the black community? Does anything like that exist other than the government, per se?
Not that I know of.
Mm-hmm. When you point out that there should be more coming together, how do you perceive something like that can happen to look out for the economic agenda of Black Chicago?
You know, Ron, if I had every answer to every question that you're giving me, I would not be personally rich, but so many others around me would be rich. I don't have those answers, which is why it's important that there are groupings such as yours that work towards that end. And there are other, like the Chatham-Avalon Chamber of Commerce, that works towards finding out those solutions, or the Cosmopolitan Chamber of Commerce. I would like to refer to them. They're the better experts on how to make this happen. So that's who I would direct your audience, your listening audience to.
Well, I'm going to ask you a political question as well. Even I still want to get back on the economic of sustaining and increasing black businesses.
You know, but also I'm going to say this, Ron. Believe it or not, as we're talking, I'm having another meeting going on in my office right now.
Oh, okay. Are you trying to get away from the political question?
No. I'm just saying.
Okay,
no.
I'm just
saying. You're
just
going to go back to. It's just I can't be with you too much longer.
Okay.
And I made that clear before we got on, because these meetings are running. I said parallel.
Okay. Well, then, and when we're looking at, I'm just going to jump back to the sustaining and increasing black businesses. What would you say, what's the overview or what message? I understand you did state about the mom pops. You did understand about the pushing, or not pushing, but handing the torch to sustaining businesses. How can you assess where we are and where we need to go as far as sustaining and increasing black businesses?
Well, again, all you have to do is walk out the door and see that there are not enough of us. Just look at the vacant storefronts and in the community, and you know that we're not taking care of the business that we need to keep our communities strong and viable. We need, one, assistance in getting those startup dollars to do so. I know there's been many discussions. Warren Ripley, who is now the new director of DECO, which is Department of Economic and Community Organizations, something like that, dollars, with the state, who is making this a priority of rebuilding communities. We need, as a community, do need to be in the forefront of those discussions and learn how to bring those dollars back. The dollars are out there, which means someone is getting them and someone is spending them. It has to be us. We need you to continue with good programs like this where the message is getting out, which basically jumpstarts other people to say, and now I'll probably be getting phone calls to get some more information, and I don't mind sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that number is 773-933-7715. 773-933-7715. I am not an expert on any of this. There are people who are much more knowledgeable.
Well, you have definitely created history based on leading that legislation in the Senate for the Black Wall Street District of 75th Street. We do commend you. It has set a standard for other cities to follow. And with that, that insight that you have definitely give us a lot to look forward to. So are you going to be running for mayor or what?
Right now I'm going to run into this meeting. with that being said, the best of the holidays to you. And have me back on the show again. I would love to even take phone calls. I don't know how the format runs, but
We're definitely going to have you back again.
You know you can find me.
You got it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That was State Senator Donnie Trotter from Chicago, Illinois, who have recently passed legislation for the Black Wall Street District of 75th Street. He then wanted to. Our program was about sustaining and increasing black businesses, but we definitely want to kind of peek in on that political side. But if you notice, he did not say yes or no. So that's maybe something needs to go into the gossip column of South Street Journal, that he didn't say yes or no. So I guess who.
And I like the way he handled that, too. We want to thank the callers that are on the line. We knew that Senator Trotter would not have a lot of time, and we do hope to have him back very, very soon, because there's just so much more to say and so much more to
do.
That's
right.
You listen to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks with your host, Mr. Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. I'm Sonia Perdue, your co-host for this segment. We're going to be right back after this break.
She had
Thank you, and we're back. You're tuned in to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks with Mr. Ron Carter, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. I'm Sonia Perdue. Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks airs every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on www.blogtalkradio.com/CBBN. You are listening to Common Ground by Kosha at the beginning of the show, and after the break, Can We Change the World was performed by VVAA. Our call-in number is 347-326-9477. If you'd like to come on the air, press the number 1, and we'll say the last 4 digits of your telephone number, and you will know that your mic is live. Ron, are you there?
I'm here. And welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Black Business Network and the Black Wall Street Show. That was pretty good with Senator Trotter. We definitely have to have him back again. And maybe, I know, again, to get a little bit into the politics of business, which plays a major part here in Chicago. With that in mind, do we have our callers or where we are, Sonia?
Well, what we're going to do, let's cover a few things. We did have some callers, but you know they come in and out, Ron.
Okay. All right.
Their patience is very short. They come, okay. They come and go, and they come and
gotcha.
Go. So we'll watch and see who comes back and who goes. One thing I wanted to talk about that the center mentioned, which is a buzzword going around, and it should be, the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. And they're sponsoring the CETA program. They have CETA in other states. And it's strange because I went to a CETA class today. For the past 2 days, I was going to CETA class.
Okay.
And strangely enough, on the front of my Furnace Program Intake Training Manual, I wrote the note, how does someone become a trained assessor for the winterization program?
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Trotter was talking about that.
Correct.
But it's possible without without being a contractor, without
right.
all of those things,
mm-hmm.
to even apply for a $500,000 grant. That's something we got to find out a little bit more about.
Oh, yeah. We
now,
have a meeting about that this morning, and which we're focusing on that direction as well. So it is an open opportunity for many to actually follow up and to monitor exactly how much business is the black community getting from this particular program. So, yeah, definitely. So how was the did you get a lot out of the, what was it, a class, a seminar that you went to?
It was a two-day class for CETA, which is Community and Economic Development Association of Cook County. And it was actually the LIHEAP program, which is for the utilities to assist people with their electric and gas bills. But the Furnace program is part of that. And once you qualify for the LIHEAP program, you do not have to reapply for the Furnace program. What happens is the LIHEAP Furnace program does not conduct maintenance work, and I'm looking at the handout here. If your heating system fails, then you qualify for the program. They come in, they evaluate the heating system, water pipes, duct work, everything connected with it.
Now, these for homeowners or property owners
for
multi-units? Okay, not multi-units.
Homeowners.
Okay.
No, homeowners specifically. They check the gas lines, the gas dryers, the hot water tanks. They go through everything connected, and you're qualified to do it now. Now, he said that he sent out 100 invitations, and there were 30 people there. I did get a follow-up from Mr. Lucas of Black Wall Street Chicago. So, and it seems like he's working on something regarding
correct.
This also.
Oh, yeah, he's had maybe about 2 meetings at his location on 35th Street.
For this particular thing? Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's out there, and there's training going on, and they're still looking for people to do it. But I'm going to find out, too, just for the listeners of Chicago's Black Business Network.com about that, the specifics, and I'm going to post it on my website, the specific qualifications for a trained assessor for the weatherization program.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's available, we should be out there doing it. Because even what they're doing, I mean, the most complicated part of this, of what I said, is probably checking the heating system. Who can't be trained to check to see if there's working smoke detectors?
Right. Well, it extends a little bit. Yeah, doesn't it extend beyond electrical and basic plumbing, utilities? Would it extend to windows and doors and other weatherization projects or jobs on a particular house?
That's a different program.
Oh, okay.
This is the what I'm reading, what I'm talking about right now is the furnace program. That's mm-hmm. one program. There are different programs under CEDA.
Okay.
Okay. That's just one program, okay? There is another one with the installation and that type of thing. That's a different program. So it's out there. It's out there for us, but we've got to – I'm going to specifically post the information for that trained assessors program.
That'd
because
be great.
Who can't check those things? I could check them.
Right.
I mean, really, I could. If many people could.
Are you going to go into the construction business now, Sonia, huh?
He
but then again, I think
$1,000, right?
Yes, that is, and I think that's what the senator was actually. I don't have anything experience in contractual, but as he indicate that I can, meaning you can actually apply for this funding, and which, as you stated, $500,000 is a pretty nice bank to begin any business operation that one person can get started in, and it's more. It can be a training of preparing to do more business ventures with that particular type of seed money. So yeah, it's a very good initiative that the senator has passed, and we do need to take full advantage of it. So we're going to be looking for it being on the Black Walls. I'm sorry, and on the Chicago Black Business Network website. That's right, Sonia?
That's what we're going to do. Now, if we put this information out there and you don't take advantage of it, then who is it on, Ron? It's on you.
Yeah,
but
that's correct.
If it's out there for you, if we're putting it out there for you, then it's on you to go out there and get it. And I don't want to make it sound like these are easy things to do, even if the money's out there. Getting qualified for state, local contracts, we know these things are not easy, Ron. But it's doable.
Right. Now, do you know if a person have to be registered as a business or a nonprofit 501c3 or just a outright person that's have a heating business? Could they actually apply for these type of grants? Do you know if it's available? What are those general qualifications maybe?
I don't have the information on the general qualifications.
Okay.
I just got out the class when I ran into the show, Ron.
Okay. Barely on the case.
It's hot off the press. It's hot off the press, Ron.
Well, it was good and on timing because Black Wall Street has formed the Black Contractors in the Neighborhood. And as we talked about sustaining and increasing businesses that we focused on more of retail, there is that other lack of business growth, and that is in the construction field. The name is appropriate, as we say, Black Contractors in the Neighborhood, looking at when the weather breaks that we don't see it. Sometimes we see a group of young Black guys standing on the steps, and the steps next door, you see other people actually doing the work. So this type of program can be a star as a training as well, and we have to see a more presence of imperative to the neighborhood with Black contractors, and that's one reason why we have formed this here particular group. And, again, they've been meeting today actually discussing how they may organize to receive this type of weatherization funding as well. So the programs of entrepreneurship and business development are there, as you said, Sonia. They're not all easy to get to, but there is a way to make those things happen. And many have done it, so that means that many can do it again. and establishing themselves in business. And that's a really a focus that Black Wall Street is looking at. Exactly how many businesses can we increase in the year 2010? When we have our summit on February 27th, those are some questions and resolutions that will be addressed as it relates to the beauty trade, contractors, business districts, as we look at 75th Street, and as we look at Madison Street from California to Austin as a Black Wall Street district. And as we look at the just the general distribution of products and as it comes to government contracts. So at the end of 2010, we hope that we can see that actually increase. But even getting to the end of 2010, there's these quarterly summits that we have where we try to evaluate exactly what we propose to do and actually if we did it, and not just ourselves, but that's the accountability process for government and organizations alike that are involved in sustaining and increasing Black businesses. So we have a very intense agenda as we move to 2010, as Donnie Trotter indicated that what Barack Obama is saying is basically rhetoric. I'm not for sure in exactly how we can turn that rhetoric into actual numbers of increasing our business growth, but that's a direction that we definitely have to look at. And that's what we're doing, and we're doing it every 3 months with the Black Wall Street Economic Summits.
And you know, you've got a big job ahead of you, Ron. You know, last week you mentioned that you had, I guess, approximately 14 activities going on, or 14 subcommittees of Black Wall Street Chicago. Now, can you tell our listeners a little bit about who's on the board, some of the people who are on your board are heading up Black Wall Street Chicago? We know you're the chairman. Can you tell us a little bit about a few other people who are on the board of Black Wall Street Chicago?
Right. Well, right behind me is the vice chair, who's been working very diligently over the past year, Cheryl Calvin. They have been involved with us for at least maybe about a year and a half or more. And then our second vice chair is Ernest Armstrong, who opened up a business on 75th Street and called the Quarry on 2310. So it is a private club, but it's open to the public for use. And matter of fact, Black Wall Street is going to host our Summit 11 reception at the Quarry on 75th Street that Mr. Armstrong has developed. And then there's Phyllis Logan, who once was our treasurer, is our legislative representative, and she's been pushing many agendas throughout the years. And right now we're very glad that she's a part of our legislative agenda, which addressed the question of Black versus minority, because we understand that minority is now the government term and that all ethnics must be branch into that that minority. And with that term minority, it seems as though Blacks are decreasing as the minority increase. So Phyllis has been instrumental in helping to move that forward. And then with Mark Allen, has been a part of many organizing efforts. The list is 22 committee members of Black Wall Street.
Is it
22?
Wow.
22. There's 22 active, I want to say core, people that's part of Black Wall Street. Mr. Bassetti, B. Elegance Clothes, Mr. Wordlaw on the west side with the medical supplies, Tatum, Renald Tatum. Oh, wow. You know, like I got to say, the name of 22 people that, but then again, it's not just those people. There's organizations that are associated with Black Wall Street as well, with the Temple of Mercy, Webb Evans from the United American Progress Association. And again, I just got to keep tipping my hat to you with the Chicago Black Business Network, which is a real instrumental part of what Black Wall Street is all about. I have been following Chicago Black Business Network for a while, but when we connected, as we did, I think that marriage was definitely a gold mine. And even as we stretched out to the Black Shopping Channel and the Chicago Black Pages International, so now working with the Chicago Urban League. So the Black Wall Street is, if I can say, is not so much of an organization as it is a term is used as African American, so to speak, because the term Black Wall Street is used by many sectors, from the rap industry, from the Black Wall Street Gang, to the Black Wall Street District of Oakland, California, to the historical Black Wall Street of Tulsa, Oklahoma. So the term Black Wall Street is more of a term of endearment, more than belonging to one individual or one organization. And so that is basically trying to capture that Black experience that we need to have. So it doesn't belong to one individual, one organization. There's many that makes up what Black Wall Street is. There's been many elected officials has been part of it. Reverend Al Sampson is a part of it. So we're going to continue to institutionalize Black Wall Street, and not so much as an organization, but as a way that we have to be when we're speaking about the economic stability. And I follow Brother Webb Evans' term. As he said, that the only way that we're really going to stop the violence among Black youth is give them examples of something that they can do to make money, and they cannot see themselves making legitimate economic business decisions if they don't see their parents doing so. So we have to do that for the children, as well as, if I can be so direct to say, the displacement of Blacks from the city of Chicago to a great extent. When we look at
I understand perfectly.
All right. So
this is what I want to do, Ron. Let's go to the phone lines and see who's on 3918. Caller 3918, you're on the air with Ron Carter, Black Wall Street, Chicago. Who's on the line?
Is that 301?
Yes, Erico, that's 301.
That's me. Okay. Thank you.
How you doing, sir?
Yeah. I'm calling from Washington, Maryland, Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Area. And I've been listening to your show for the last hour or so. And, of course, and this can be, you know, put it down as theoretical, you know, trying to construct a model here of economic development. And, you know, listen to what you've been saying and what I've noticed in my area and my experience here in America. I'm left scratching my head. I don't understand what's going on, why things are never discussed in the proper manner. I'll give you an example. And it gives what you're talking about. I'll give you an example of what I'm saying. About 8 years ago, I had my home built. Okay? 8 years ago.
All right.
80% of the labor, people working, were Hispanic. 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who got a government program, who trained, I don't know. 80%. Majority of them could not converse with me in English.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So language and Ebonics ain't obstacle there. Okay? When I was, you know, had my home built and I was, it caught my attention, they got laborer sites. Hispanics, with labor site training other Hispanics in the construction trade on site.
Mm-hmm.
In Alexandria, Virginia, and Oxon Hill, Maryland, and you know, new areas, downtown areas have sprouted up. Again, you know, you're driving through, you notice who's working there. Again, majority Hispanic. And I ain't knocking it, you know, it's all good. But I don't know where the government training programs and all this is at. You know, I read an article about New Orleans after Katrina. Who's rebuilding Katrina? Again, immigrants from Honduras. So when we talk about getting black people to do something like simple as weatherization, but to some extent, let's be honest, it's just laying down caulk, you know, to a major, you know, that's what it is. I for the life of me, sir, I don't understand why is it so difficult to get something like that. We're not even trained to do that. When I see people coming from third world countries, can't speak a lick of English, doing work.
Well, I think that the dynamics of each city have some similarities when it comes to black contractors. I have not been to Maryland. I don't know what the makeup is or the even the population as it relates to blacks are concerned. But the story that I'm hearing you say is a reflection of what is Oakland, California, New York City, Atlanta, Minneapolis. The sentiments that you have laid out is a reflection of those same cities. Even though we talk about a lot of good things that's happened in Chicago, again, as you can say, it has not been in priority to our population. And even for contractors are concerned, here in Chicago, there is a political overtone on who gets contracts and who. If I can kind of put it to you this way to try to sum up your point to a certain degree, is that here in Chicago, we had Harold Washington that was a black mayor. I don't know if you're familiar with that, or are you?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Harold Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, with that in mind, after there was the Vidotti Act 29, I believe, that was fighting against Harold Washington and everything he did. After Harold Washington died, during the course, Vidotti Act was known as a racist. So after Harold Washington died 20 years later or so, he made the comment that the council wars between blacks and white in the city of Chicago was not about race. It was about power. Now, my assessment is, regardless if it's not about race and if it's not about and it's about power, black people was used for power. And what I hear you state is no different from, so our picture is not just a city issue. It is a national issue. To answer your question, I think that many people have the answer. But what I would like for you to invite you to do and is to focus on a economic agenda of your own in Maryland. No matter where you're at, you have to be able to start that dialogue. Black Wall Street came out of frustration. We was frustrated about the issues, and we were complaining about the issues. And as we start complaining, we indicated that we're going to have a meeting to let our frustrations out. That meeting was on Malcolm X's birthday on May 19th, 2007. In which our focus was that Malcolm indicated that if we don't start doing it now, we're going to turn around, it's going to be too late. In Chicago, it's almost too late. It's not too late, but it's almost too late. And one reason why it's not too late for us is the reason why we claim 75th Street as a Black Wall Street district. And we're claiming the west side of Chicago as a Black Wall Street district, the same way the government in each of these cities around the country has reclaimed the center downtown, Atlanta, Chicago, Oakland, California, New York. All of these cities have, the suburbs have came back to the city. And as they did so, they did a gentrification of most of these black cities. So to see Hispanics doing your work, yes, it's good that they do it, whatever reason, how they get it, you're not going to take anything from anyone. But I believe because our situation is the same in Maryland as it is in Chicago, it was a systematic plan. if it was different, that if Chicago blacks did not have the same problem as Maryland and as New York and as Oakland did, then okay, everything is fine. That's you all problem. But you all problem is the same as each one of these cities. So I would advise, I don't know, again, where you are or what type of organizing skills you have, but you're going to have to ignite a something similar to a Black Wall Street district in Maryland, even if it's nothing but three blocks. You're going to have to do that, again, because of the youth. Those youth got to be able to see some black contractors and not know other races doing that work so that they can know that they can do it. So we have to start where we are. And the frustration that we had 2 years ago is what led us to where we are today, that we have had the state of Illinois, all 52 senators, sign on to a Black Wall Street district in Chicago. And we're moving on to the west side. You got to do the same regardless of the frustrations that we have. That's being direct with you.
Yeah, well, I'm running for school board. Okay.
Okay. All right.
And here's an example of one of my campaign issues that it's hard to get answers here because I don't know. We just keep doing the same thing over and over again. But anyway, I vocational training has been a staple in urban education for over 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And African American youth have been lured in those areas for ages, away from college prep, which is all right. I ain't got no problem with that. Even today, in my county, blacks make up the majority of the vocational training.
Okay.
I'm like, well, so, but after they finish, when everything's said and done, there is no union card, there is no apprenticeship program, there is no jobs, there is no working, there is nothing. There's no connection to what's going on in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, again, trying to get answers, trying to get some resolution as to why it is that we fund these programs, have all this so-called modern equipment.
I guess I probably wasn't, pardon me for cutting you off, I guess I wasn't that direct in asking. You asked the question, and I thought I was saying the reason is racism. And
blacks running the ship. Now
you're not running the ship. I don't understand how you're running the ship. In what capacity are you saying that you run the ship?
The blacks are superintendents. The blacks are principals. The blacks are counselors. You know, it's blacks running the. I don't know what we want. You know, we the majority of the school district. But again, look. It's the conversation. It's the model of our success.
Well, let me kind of go back. I think I'm having another angle to your answer.
Yeah.
The other answer is I was talking to a major businessman here in Chicago, and matter of fact, his name is L.Z. Higginbottom. He's one of the richest blacks here in Chicago, and he's very close to the mayor. I would think that he's maybe the in the top 10. Not up there with Oprah Winfrey, but in Chicago, he's very close to her in his wealth. He made the statement that one problem that we have is that we have churches, religious, and social service activists and elected officials running the economics of our community. Now, what Donnie Trotter offered us earlier today was a good economic agenda, but what we still don't have is business people running the economics. And if we focus more on business, the same way if we here in Chicago, you have Italytown, Chinatown, Koreantown, naturally you have Whitetown, but all of those, except for Whitetown, all those other groups do not have elected officials, but they control the economics of their community because business people run their communities, not elected officials, not social service agency, and not churches. And once we be able to focus more business, even with you running on the city council, you're running for the school board.
Yes.
Okay, as you're running for the school board, I would suggest that you form an alliance with, now is that an elected position?
Yes, it is, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, and if that's, since that's an elected position, you're going to have to build you some business people so that you can get the proper campaign contributions so you don't behold to others that may fund your campaign. Even if you get funded through the grassroots effort of people supporting you, you still gonna need a, because you may need to go to another higher level than the school board. You're gonna have to have business people to fund your program. So who are those business people gonna be? Here in Chicago, many say that the University of Chicago helped fund Barack Obama campaign when he ran for U.S. Senate. And so there is that stereo that the University of Chicago actually bought Barack Obama. So if that's the case or not, what we need is business people not only running our economics, but for to a certain degree, our business people have to run our elected officials. And it depends on which business people are supporting your candidacy. And if they're not, then your goal need to be to promote and to build an economic base even around your candidacy. And if that economic base going to be outside of your community, then that's probably what's going to happen to you. Because, again, that is the case here in Chicago. Our elected officials are steady, going to the base of who supports their candidacy. I would say that Donnie Trotter is wherever he get his contributions from, he has always still been true to a black agenda. There's many of us, but sometimes it's kind of hard to distinguish. But I believe that you have to start leading the way. I don't know if there's any other person in Maryland, but you're going to have to do an extra step because of the, because of the cry that I hear on, you're not getting no answers. So you're not getting the answers, meaning that you're going to have to create the answers.
You're okay. I'm okay with that. I'm on my own. Okay, if you're gonna do this right, and you're gonna do it the way the Koreans do it, you on your own. If you're gonna do it the way the Arabs do it, you on your own. Okay,
yes.
In the black community, we don't think like that, and that gets one other question.
Well,
we're gonna
think back that way. Okay.
No, we don't. I tell you what.
We're gonna get there. Go ahead. What's your other question? We're gonna get there.
I don't know.
I'm gonna come to Maryland, and I'm gonna hook up with you.
I'm gonna tell you something. Because if you look at the beauty care industry, the Koreans got it on lockdown, using every anti-competitive, antitrust violation they can come up with.
Black Wall Street. We did a study on that, and we have even within Black Wall Street, we have a committee that's focusing on the beauty industry. I don't want to give it so much out, but we had a meeting this morning addressing that. So there, as Sonia indicated, there are 17 initiatives of Black Wall Street. It's a matter of managing our growth. And managing our growth makes it seem as though we're not doing as other groups are, but there is a group of us that are. And I think that you are one of those examples to get that going right there in Maryland. You need for us to come by there and help you out?
Well, I'll let you know. No doubt about it. The election is I'm running a campaign the right way. I'm putting out. I'm not like you said. I get ideas. I got a philosophy, and I'm sticking to it. And
okay.
I think too often we compromise. So we don't make. Come on. 2010, and we're still going around the bush over and over again. But look, here's my thing. You heard of Dr. Claude Anderson,
who talks
about ethno aggregation. Okay.
Yes.
And it's just my opinion here. I don't see, given the current recession and the current financial crisis we're in, and where African Americans are in relative to other groups that are smaller, but as we stated, more powerful economically. how are we going to, and based on what, you know, with this recirculation of our dollar being, you know, half a day, if that, how are we going to get anywhere economically on the mom and pop level without engaging in boycotts?
Well, you know,
there's someone in, who talked about the Ebony experiment I heard about.
Yeah, that's here in Chicago, Illinois, too,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. How? I'm originally from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
y'all really
had
issues there, huh?
well, the Arab community or the Chaldean, I'm not knocking them, but hey, they got 95%, 99% of the grocery stores.
Same way in New York City, in Harlem, New York, the same thing.
I'm not knocking them, but the way in which they did it is that they applied meticulous detail to their ethnocentricity.
Well, I'm sorry, what's your name again, sir?
Bob.
Bob?
Yes.
Okay, well, I understand what you're stating. I don't want to know that there's a term that a lot of blacks use, say, stop blaming the white man. I understand that very clearly. I'm a journalist, and I normally deal with facts. But I still have my own perspective. And it is based on a historical journey as being a newspaper man. And as I indicated, I don't know if you first heard on the program that being a publisher and editor of newspaper, I started my newspaper off as a community newspaper, and I just wanted to be just that, a community newspaper, serve that particular community. But as we continue to try to be a community newspaper, our issues continue to start turning black-orientated. That wasn't the goal. We just wanted to serve a community. But the issues became more racial and racial to the point that South Street Journal became an activist type of newspaper. It's something like going back to Frederick Douglass, and he said that the major tool that he see to uplift his people was, at that time, he said, the print, but it's the media now overall. And so, but with that in mind, we got to look at what has actually happened. Again, what's happened in Chicago, what's happened in Maryland, what's happened in New York, what's happened in Oakland, all, and what's happened in L.A. to blacks, it's happened all over the nation. So if it's happening all over the nation at the same time, then there has to be a reason for that, and that reason is just it only happening to blacks. It's not happening even with the killings of youth. It's not in parity to other races that are held meanest personalities. So it's only happened to blacks as far as the economics, as far as the youth, as far as the education, as far as the dropout, as far as the drugs, as far as the AIDS. All of these things, of the ills of those things, are happening to blacks in the United States more than any other nationality. So that makes me come back to reality that it is based on race. And if things are based on race, it's based on racism. And God bless Malcolm X when he talked about the white man per se, and he went to Mecca and he changed his agenda to say we are all equal. And Malcolm X kind of took too much of a big step there, because we're not all equal, and it is race. And again, as I stated earlier, when this white alderman in Chicago, Ed Bedodiak, he indicated that the council wars against Harold Washington was not about race, it was about power, but to use it race to get that power. So it's racism that it was happening to black people. And when we come to that realization, we will be able to uplift ourselves the same way we identified race in the 60s, race was identified. The Black Panther Party did not come about because – it came about because of protection of their community. They started as a community organization. But as they evolved around the issues, they was forced to be a race organization, where initially it was a community organization. So race back in the 60s, race in the 70s, race in the 40s, the race in 1921 with Black Wall Street of Tulsa, Oklahoma. That was a community that was self-sustaining. That black people controlled the economics to the point that white people had to come to them for loans and for goods. And it was race that destroyed Tulsa, Oklahoma, to the point that they couldn't stop them economically, so the only thing left was violence. So they used race as a means of violence, as a means of stopping a race growth. And today we seem to not understand why race has everything to do with the capitalism and economics of the United States, when all of these issues are more detrimental in the black community, much higher in parity to its population. It's race. I mean, when you ask the question why, I think that we can, and with here in Black Wall Street, when we indicated that we wanted a Black Wall Street district on 75th Street, and we said we wanted a Black Wall Street district on the west side of Chicago, of Madison Street, it's based on race. And we have, and if the powers that be, such as Ed Bedodiak, wanted power using race, then we have to use our race. So we have the ebony experience. It is about race. It's not about just buying black. It's about race. And I can use the same term. Some of my good friends are white folks, but I understand that they have an advantage over me because of their race. They make more money than me because of their race. I'm in a newspaper business. Most white folks make more money than me because they're with a white publication and I own a black publication. It's race when it comes to advertising and promoting. It's race when selling cigarettes have to put cools on a pack of sunglasses and hip-hop artists is on a pack of cigarettes. It's power for capitalism, but you're using race to get there. It's no accident that all blacks are moving out to the suburbs. So
let me just add this anecdotal, because you say you deal in facts. Let me just throw this out. Not that I disagree with anything you said, but I just want to, in my own way, just find what I believe is another twist to it. Again, my hometown of Detroit, Dr. Claude Anderson was invited there to look at the economic situation of black folk in Detroit.
Okay.
He said he approached the city council. Eight out of the nine members on city council are black. The other black, there's a lone white woman there, of course, married to a black man who was a fierce lawyer, fierce freedom fighter, of course. The mayor is black, okay? His police chief black, okay? He said, one of the things that the city of Detroit needed was sort of an African town, a trendy tourist attraction that can attract businesses and get the dollar recirculating, take a block or so. All right.
City council voted that down twice.
Well, no, it's not only that. It's not only that. It's deeper than that.
Okay.
The Mexicans, the Arabs, the Greeks, the Chinese, the Koreans, the Italians, the Armenians all ran to the city council and told them, if y'all set up an African town, that would be racist. That would be racist.
Okay,
every one of them came to the table, had their own town. There was a Mexican town, a Chaldean town, a Greek town, a little Italy. Everybody had their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was supported by the city, big time,
right.
Mm-hmm. But the whole, in a city, the town is 85% black. The notion of creating a little African town was racist. And the mayor, who's supposed to have been a strong black man at the time, had Farrakhan coming to the city and all that.
Well, I understand. I mean, here in Chicago,
they all voted it down. Okay,
right.
So when we say about race, we got to have a caveat here. And I'm just saying what I've seen. It ain't white folk. It's our own people. getting in the way.
We have a term here in Chicago with Black Wall Street. We use the term follow the money from A to Z. And once we follow the money to A to Z, maybe you will see why and how some of those black candidates voted the way they did. But here in Chicago, we still have the same issue. We have had the state of Illinois to pass legislation for Black Wall Street, but we have not had the city of Chicago to do so. The city of Chicago is well aware of our initiative, but they have not moved. And we have met with the Black Caucus of about 17 black elected officials here in Chicago that we had made a presentation to. That was almost a year and a half ago, as nothing has happened. So I understand that there are many reasons why, but I do know that it's a shame based on Detroit and its population. I still suggest that Detroit needs to still move forward, and again, you need to still move forward, even if it's nothing but three blocks. And I understand that. Let me ask you, what is your what's your background? What's your profession?
I'm a lawyer. I'm a patent attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a patent attorney, and my whole interest right now in terms of activism, because I have one of the things, I have young children. And, you know, I haven't, you know, I've been out of school for a long time, for over 20 years. I haven't thought about public education. You know, once I got my little diploma, you know, I went on. You know, I thought about it till I had children, and I went to set them up. And I'm looking at the progress and where we're at right now as a community among black people. Mm-hmm. And I was disgusted. I was like, what the? And when I went to talk to some people, I listened to the conversation. I said, no. If you ain't thinking right, you ain't acting right.
Mm-hmm.
That the whole thought process was off kilter. There's no way we're going to do anything with this type of thinking, this type of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And
what's
so
the population of Maryland? I mean, what you're in Maryland?
I'm in Charles County, Maryland, which is just south of Prince George's County, Maryland. Which is it's a good county, good quality of life.
What's the population? What's the black population?
It's 140,000. Blacks represent between 40-42%.
That's very good. Okay.
Black children represent 55% of the schools. It is a growing. If we were 50% African American, we would be the largest largest minority county. With the highest income.
What's the
income.
Population of the, what's the percentage of black businesses there, would you know?
Zero, almost. Close to, it's very, 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 very little. It's even, I don't get involved, and be honest with you, with the, it's close to nothing. I'm not as intimately or detailed involved in it, again, because I'm working on education, but let me just say it to you like this. The program that's set up to address the issues of African Americans is called Disadvantaged Underprivileged Business Enterprises. You know, I'm just telling you, so you know what that's all. So I can't even go there. I can't even talk. I don't even want to talk about that. It's just it's very, very, very low. Let me just add this one other thing here, and this deals with the state of Maryland. Minority business enterprises. This is what I wanted to add. Minority business enterprises have been in existence here for over 40 years. They've gotten nowhere in terms of really spurring on the black development, where you would not only have blacks doing business with blacks, but blacks doing business with everybody else.
But that's a government agency you're speaking of, isn't it?
Exactly, but it is amazing that nothing has been done, with this group. And this is the thing. You're right. When you mention minority, I'm feeling you. I'm with you. The notion of minority. Minority is really someone in the legal profession. There could be a firm that has 30% third minority lawyers, right? And
right.
It could be 1% black, that the whole minority thing doesn't mean anything anymore. It's long lost its meaning in terms of being applied to black African Americans.
Well, how long? Just trying to get an idea of this county. How long has the population, say, from 0 to 40 percent? And what time frame did that happen?
Good question.
Would you know?
The black population has about doubled in the last decade. Blacks have moved from D.C. and Prince George's County into this county. Around the time I started moving, about 10 years ago, we were about 20%.
Why were they moving from D.C.?
Lower tax base, bigger homes, like I said, quality of life. The schools were supported to be better, more retail. It's a big room community. People work for the government. They work, you know, outside the county, but, you know, they bring their money, their high incomes into the county. Again, lower tax base, bigger homes, they belief is, you know, better environment.
So there would not be the working class, the population of blacks, there's probably, or is there a tab for entrepreneurship in that county?
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing. The black median income is higher than the white median income. Black home ownership is higher than white home ownership. But there has not been a catalyst. Like you mentioned, you know, our social business political thought is coming from the church, so to speak. So unless if you ain't got Reverend by your name, or if you're not, or you can't, or NAACP, for example, and I'm not knocking any of them, but that's where the community is.
So there's
is there a
black business leader to the point that has been pretty known, successful, or a commercial name black business there? When I say commercial name, that he promotes and advertises himself, like Johnny the Car Salesman, I don't know. But
There was a gentleman here 4 years ago who ran for state legislature, who was a big contractor. You know, he had deals with the hospital. He sits on very prestigious boards. But I would not necessarily classify him as a businessman in the context that we're talking about today.
Mr. Carter?
Yes, sir. Yes, Sonia.
I want you to know we have 12 minutes left on the show. We do have another caller, so we want to wind up with this call.
All right. Well, Bob, let us move on to another caller, but look for us at call me at Black Wall Street, 312-624-8351, so that we can dialogue some more. I think that I have no problem coming to Maryland and getting nosy.
Okay, thank you.
All right, please give me a call.
Appreciate your show. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Come back next Thursday, Bob. Thank you so much.
I will. Thank you. Thank both of you.
Okay.
You're welcome. You're listening to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks with your host, Mr. Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. I'm Sonia Perdue, co-host for this segment. We want to check and see who else is on the line, and then we're going to wind up the show. We appreciate all the callers tonight. Caller in Chicago, 4487, the last four numbers. You're live with Mr. Carter.
Mr. Carter, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing okay. Who is this?
My name is Enoch Mubarak, and I've been listening to this show, and I got to say, I've never heard so much crying out of the black man. What is going on? Listen, you know, you guys are sitting there talking, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, every time the black man come up with something, you guys always have to go to the city, go to someone else, tell them what your plans are, tell them what you want to do, see if they're going to kick in, and see if they're going to help you along. And that's how come the black man can't get in. Well, you have to roll undercover. You have to stay off the radar. You know,
stay out of the radar? What are you talking about?
All right. You have to,
I'm a newspaper man. How you expect us to stay out of the radar? Go ahead.
Listen, like, you look at 75th Street over here, what you're talking about. Do you know that by the time the alderman came up with, you know what I'm saying, talking about, well, we need to limit these beauty supplies store, I mean, these grease lines along this corridor, they were already there. They grew up there quietly, and the next thing you know, they were there. Just like Chinatown, any of these towns, if the black man wants to get his own, he doesn't have to, you understand, go and try to see who's going to pitch in. Just, hey, get together, and next thing you know, it's there. Next thing you know, it's already there. But the black man always got to hold a press conference. He always got to go to the city. He always got to try to find this program, see how many people want to pitch in. Forget about that, man.
Well, you know, I understand. I mean, there is an organization within the organization. But when you look at Chicago, one part, even the programs that Donnie Trotter has indicated, that money is not only available to blacks, but it's available to anybody that applied. That was some pertinent information. Even though, as he made that information out, other people can to apply for it as well. So going to a press conference, going to put, you know, that's just the government end of it. But the other part of it is actually, as I understand and I agree with you, that we just got to do it. And that's something that we have been doing. But at the same time, we still have to have a means of communicating. This program here, give us a means of communicating, even to the point that you made some note to me on the Chicago Black Business Network. I wouldn't have known who you are without some open communications. We're on the internet now. All information is available. There's nothing.
Brother, I know all that.
Okay.
Listen. But I'm telling you, all that is talk and rhetoric. Because after all is said and done, the black man or the black politician, when they want money, burr it, $600 in his war chest. Whenever the black man want to run off, he got to get out and speak big. You got 16-year-olds, 7-year-olds, I'm real big before they little stuff. At least, you know what I'm saying, these kids, you understand, they not going down. They doing them. They raise their own money. You know, you could learn something from these kids who be out here tagging. But the black man, you know, he always got to, you know, go, I mean, and then you end up begging.
Wait a minute now, you didn't finish. You said the black man always got to, you didn't finish that part. Always got
to
what?
The black man always has to let his hand be seen, let his hand be known, because there's money. They give us the money if we apply. Forget about the money. Forget about the grants. Forget about all of that. If you have what it takes to get out here and make it happen, come up with your own loot. That's all I'm saying about these kids. They get out here and they make their own money. They don't go crying to their parents. They don't go crying to the church. They get out here and they make their money. But you guys, grown men, you get out here and the next thing you know, Wall Street Initiative. Okay, fine. But, hey, let them look up, and next thing you know, they get on walls on 75th Street, and it's there. How did that happen? Where did that come from? Who put this here? Because that's how you roll. You have to roll with stealth. You lose the element of surprise each and every time you step out the gate and hold a press conference. Or, you know what I'm saying, go and apply for the money. You get yourself, you put yourself on the radar.
But, Igna, I understand your sentiments for basically just doing it and don't put yourself out there. But there is a time element where here in Chicago, again, as I stated before, the Chicago has a 2040 and a 2020 plan. Knowing that that does exist, that means that anything that happens in Chicago, Mayor Daley is the chairman of the building committee in Chicago. As he has that position, does nothing move in Chicago if a businessman is going to open up a store on Madison Street or 75th Street? That comes through his desk. There's nothing that, and the bottom line here is land. If you control the land, you control the economics. It's nothing we can do, unless it's crime written, that it's not public information. I understand there's an internal organizational direction that we have to take internally, but that internally is basically too late to a great extent. Lake Meadows is coming down. When Lake Meadows in Chicago comes down, that was projected 10 years ago. What happened 10 years ago was taking the whole demographics not only the demographics of a particular area, but you're also looking at the demographics of a population of people that goes along with your plans. Whatever we do, when Walmart indicated that they wanted to move on 83rd Street, that direction was identified 10 years ago. As a newspaper man, my job was to investigate when did Walmart indicate that it wanted to move on 83rd Street. That was 10 years ago. Upon doing that, they have evaluated, they have studied, they have did their market analysis of the stability of moving a Walmart on that particular location. So what we do internally is one thing, but as we move in this capitalistic society, and that's what it is, everything is public. Yes, I have my business plan, my internal business plan that I work from, but my business plan is going to have to be presented. With the city of Chicago, there is lists. This organization is the funding mechanism for the MacArthur Foundation. Any development or plans that any organization in Chicago, from the Chicago Urban League, from the Nation of Islam, based on their location or the building that they had on 79th and Halsted, all came from the department, from the building commission that's headed by Richard Daley. So the internal workings of our spirit, I believe, is what you are referring to or where we have to move. But there is a business external that have to be aggressive because everything is open board. When we know what the city of Chicago is going to do in the year 2040, we had to bogart the doors to find out what they was going to do. This committee consisted of 75 people. Of these 75 people, only two was on that committee was black. We had to bogart public information to say that you're going to put the black community on the table. So the plans of where the city of Chicago is going is in the works. Rather, whatever we do, they are moving forward. When they stated that they're going to increase the south and the west side of the near loop by 175,000 people, those plans was made 20 years in advance. So, and it happened. In the last 7 years, the city of Chicago has increased their power base by 175 housing units, not people. If it's people, there's maybe about 300,000 people that came in Chicago within the last 10 years. That is power. Those are votes. That is an economic base, and where the people can be apathetic all you want. Chicago, the city of Chicago, has something like 1.2 million registered voters in the year 2000. When the U.S. Census come out in 2010, there will be maybe about 700,000 blacks in Chicago. That is diluting the economic base. So to not be public, the public is on us. It's not that we have to be exclusive in our plans, but the plan is already on us. You know, and I think that that's when I indicated earlier with Bob. When we look at it, we're fighting invisible racism of what's happening to us. And I think that, you know, we can still work in the spirit of inclusion among ourselves, but there is a public drive of accountability that we got to fight. There's many, many issues that we're addressing here, from our children killing ourselves to the education is 51% dropouts. I'm sorry, other way around, 51% actually graduate and 49% are dropouts to the AIDS, to all these issues that among us, that is public information on us. That is no secret. That is not working behind the closed door to get things done. The issues are on top of us, and they're compounding that gets in our way. I don't want to take anything away from the might and the direction and the encouragement of black people to move forward. But we do have to look at the big picture as we move forward, and we cannot just rest upon our internal plans. When we say we want 75th Street to be a black Wall Street district, we bogarted it. We came out publicly. We took that particular area publicly so that it can be known, so that the community can have some dialogue in that direction. We cannot do that quietly, because we know that that steel is going to get out. The city of Chicago knows everything. Remember now, we got cameras just about everywhere. They got eyes on us. I have a camera looking at me right now. Who knows? So,
weak, yes, man. That's weak.
That's
weak. But listen, why does it cost $200 to get in your organization?
Okay,
Connor,
Sonia.
We're down to our last minutes here.
Okay.
This is what we're going to do. I want to, first of all, hold on, stay on the phone, Enoch. This is what I want to do. I want to thank all the listeners for calling in. We're going to go to non-streaming so that Mr. Carter can finish up his call with you. And we have one more call
on
the line.
His call is finished with me. I've heard enough. I've heard enough. I mean, too much talk on that man's part. I mean, he talk about all that and then got to sneak up on Daly with his plan. As you would go right to Daly and say, hey, man, this has going down. You know what I'm saying? And
That's exactly what it is.
Ask,
but I appreciate your call. We need to talk, though. We need to talk after that.
Don't ask for what you are not prepared to take.
Okay.
Peace.
We're going to communicate online.
Thank you.
All right, Sonia, where we at?
Have a good evening. We have one more caller on the line. We're not streaming anymore. We're off the air now, but we're going to go ahead and take the caller since they were gracious enough to come in. Caller 1878, are you still on the line?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I wish I had an opportunity to have responded to the previous caller, because our initial, this is Cheryl Calvin, Vice Chairman.
Oh, hi, Cheryl.
And our initial response to Daly or anyone else was to go ahead and claim 75th Street as the Black Wall Street District. So we did exactly what he proposed that we should do. And all the opposition that we faced, we had no other choice but to go that route, which is what was suggested by Michael Carter of California. So,
correct.
Unfortunately, we did not get a chance to let the listeners and that caller know that that was how we got to where we are now, and we are just now getting a fair response from those other entities that that he mentioned we should be taking it from.
We did force them
to respond to us, but he didn't get the chance to hear that part because he was too frustrated.
Right.
Welcome to the show, Cheryl. But what I do want you and Ron to know, we are no longer streaming live, but our show, when it goes in the archive, after we go off the air, everything is still in our tape for tonight.
Oh, okay.
So it's still going to be, if we go to 3 hours, it's still going to be in our package. It's just not streaming live right now. Just want you
to
know.
Got it.
Oh, so we have other callers. So we have other listeners here with us anyway, right? Is that what you're saying?
We're not taking any more calls tonight. But anyway,
But we have other listeners.
There are other listeners on the line.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. All right, Cheryl. Don't say nothing bad, Cheryl.
You should have been listening to his frustration and making sure he knew that, you know, this is exactly what we have done, and that's a hard work. You know, it's easy to say. It's easier to say than to do, because
it's
not hard for that.
Yeah, well, again, Black Wall Street came out of people having frustrations, and they, you know, we just took our frustrations and started moving to them, because, again, we do have some intense frustrations based on where we are. But I still look at that with all the issues that we face, we are still moving very progressively, taking in consideration the Civil Rights Bill was just passed, in the 50s? So really that is, we have made a major progress. The Voting Rights Bill, a lot of bills that was passed just in the 50s. So as we were fighting for those human rights, the capitalism was moving on us on the other side to the point of where we are now. So, yeah,
I do understand the frustration that we have. Again, Cheryl, as you can indicate, we get a lot of them at our summits.
And one other irony is the caller made the point that why is the black man crying so much? Remember our second session, I think it was, the one I was at, and I said I didn't want to be at a crying session.
Yeah.
But we began to realize that, you know, the black man is crying because the black man has something to cry about.
Well, you know what? I never heard it said it so good like that before.
Wasn't nobody listening to our crying, but we had some people up there that was making millions of dollars that was sitting up there crying.
Just
because we just like to, you know, I want to say black folks always want somebody to say, well, I always want to show their teeth. We were crying because we wanted tears to be coming out of our eyes. I mean, it was, but for some reason, black people get to a point in their life where they believe or somehow come to the conclusion that we shouldn't be asking for anything. But our tax dollars are going into the pot. So how come we can't get some of our tax dollars back for the work that needs to be done? Because what happens is other people come into our community and get our tax dollars to teach us what we need in our community as if we don't know any better.
Right.
I don't know where black people come off believing that we shouldn't be asking for anything. I'm not asking for nothing I'm not entitled to.
Correct.
I'm not going to keep letting you tell me no without telling me why you're telling me no. So, you know, if a tear sheds every now and then because you're doing that to me, don't tell me if you step on my toe, it ain't going to hurt. I may respond, but that don't mean I'm not going to demand what I'm entitled to. So I think that's the perspective that we miss as a people. But I'm done, you know, and I'll stay on the line. I'll try to catch you guys. And thank you so much for doing this.
I want to thank you, and I do look forward to meeting you real soon.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, Cheryl is our Cheryl. We missed you this morning. What happened to you this morning?
Well, you didn't mention anything, so I just kind of. But no, really, I had a kid at home and
some
at school. So
Was somebody else sat in your seat? But I was waiting for you to come sit in your seat.
Oh, I'm sorry. I will be at the summit.
What do you mean the summit? That's February 27th.
Hey, I'll be there.
There's a lot of other things in between now and February 27th.
You know what? You know what? I understand that. And in my defense, just so that if there are any other listeners, he knows that I'm on sick leave. I do read the email, but I don't catch everything. I'm trying to get this in order.
All right. I understand what's going on. I'm not going to pressure it. I know you got stuff you got to do, but you better come on back, woman.
Right. I have work to do with the black woman.
All right. Okay.
All right. Good talking to you guys tonight, and don't be putting me on the spot like that publicly.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl.
All right. You guys take care.
You have a good evening.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
I want to thank our guests and listening audience for joining us. This is Sonya Perdue and our host, Mr. Ron Carter, for this segment of Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks. We'll be here every Thursday at 7 p.m. In Central Standard Time, and we want you to join us. I want to remind you that Black Wall Street Chicago wants you to join them on WLS-TV, Channel 7 in Chicago, this Saturday at noon and at 6 p.m.
That's correct.
Right.
That's right.
Terry Porterfield and Cheryl Burton did a half an hour segment on the now designated Black Wall Street District with the chairman of Black Wall Street, Ron Carter, and we want you to watch this segment Saturday, and that's noon at 6 p.m. Mr. Carter,
so I guess maybe that's that's a big press release that we're putting out there, Brother Ignac. I understand where you're coming from. I invite you. Isn't he from Chicago, Ignac?
Yes, he is.
Okay, we have to invite him to a Black Wall Street meeting. I want people to call area code 312-624-8351 to have more information about Black Wall Street. And, Sonya, we definitely going to have to talk about South Street Journal on our next show. Based on we're looking at the paper, we have a relaunch next week, and we're going to have more news related to Black Wall Street and just generally sustaining and increasing black businesses with all the other issues and frustrations that we have, but we will be focusing on those good positive things as well. So, yeah, I do welcome our listeners to join us on our next show and give us your comments and your suggestions, and we definitely will be following up with them.
That's great, Ron. You know what I'd like to do also? I'd like to go back and look at some of those old issues and look and see what was going on in the community and the minds of the people and have you reflect on that for us and then take that same issue and look and see where it is today, what's happening
okay.
with it today, how it's going on. I like to see that.
Yeah,
the like
only problem, Sonia, with that is that we can take a headline from 1994 and just change the date, and it almost will be the same, almost, for the most part, based on a lot of people are still.
That's why I want to bring that up, because I wanted to put that out there. I want to. That's
right.
Exactly what I want to do. Take that headline
okay.
And get some response, and then ask the wise. Ask the wise. You
right.
see where I'm going. You get to know me real good.
I got you.
Ron Carter.
Okay, now that snuck up on me, Sonia. That snuck. I didn't know you had that much insight. I didn't know that. You must have been doing some real studying. Yeah, you must be. Right, you are.
I want to thank all of you for joining us. I'm getting some to you this week too. I got something else going on too. Thank you for joining us tonight, Mr. Carter, and I want to thank all of our guests. We had some good call-ins. I'll send the numbers to you too, Ron.
Okay.
We're gonna leave tonight with something that I played on the last show. Catch us on Thursday nights with Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks, and we want you to have a great, great evening. Good night, Ron.
Good night to you, Sonia, and good night to all listeners.
Many miles and a little more you'll live. But how many times in your years to live you give? I wanna give a little lesson to you. Now and then it may be of some use. A thought that may sure. More and more,
something to believe,
someone to believe in,
something to believe.
Woman and man, since time began, sacrificed. Sometimes wise with the ways of love, kind of nice. And then the luck becomes somewhat hard. Bad advice helps to pull you apart. Money blues, you lose the family. And that ain't for me. I gotta have someone to believe in. Loving partners come in order when you start a friend.
Something to believe.
I read a sign somewhere that said, everyone walking can always stumble over truth. But never you mind, cause we always get right back up and leave it there. Knowing we need a little truth. I mean, just a little something to believe, a little someone. Everybody wanna go to heaven, but don't nobody wanna die. May as well have your heaven on earth for someone to